Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Sowers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening
to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome to the championship weekend episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast at Inside Lacrosse, featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. A lot to get to, Dix, so we'll get right to it. Dixie, let's get it. We made it. Remember back in February, we were talking about perhaps there'll be an NCAA championship. Maybe we can get through the season. Looking back on it, the sacrifices us fans had to make, not so much, but obviously the players, the coaches, families of the players, and even broadcasters had to make some sacrifices. But it's here, championship weekend. We have survived and we have advanced.
Discipline, resilience, determination. Oh, wait a minute. Wrong podcast. Exciting to be here on the precipice of championship weekend. Connecticut, East Hartford, Connecticut. I'm learning about East Hartford and West Hartford.
What's your favorite Hartford?
Neither. I've flown into Hartford a few times. I think the closest I've been to Hartford was Bristol, Connecticut years ago when I went up to ESPN to be the analyst championship weekend at the mothership. What I'm hearing is East Hartford is the lesser of the two in terms of social life, restaurants, bars, those kinds of things, which who knows what that looks like, you know, even though we're coming out of this COVID thing, who knows what the social scene looks like. But, you know, I've talked to Anish quite a bit. I think he lived up in Bristol or around Bristol for a period. Dave Ryan as well, who I'm calling the games this weekend for Westwood One. They're both very, very savvy on the two Hartfords. So we're staying in East Hartford, which I'm told is kind of lame, but you know, hey, you go and you stay in the hotel where you are and, you know, maybe we'll go grab dinner in West Hartford, but it's going to be a busy weekend. You know, we've got, so we're recording on Thursday. I'll fly out tonight. Hopefully get to practices in some semblance tomorrow. You know, a lot of COVID restrictions are in place. A lot of protocols are in place by the NCAA. So we'll see what that looks like. Two semifinal games on Saturday on Westwood One Radio. And then Sunday, Dave and I will be calling the Division II and Division III championships for NCAA.com. So two great games on tap there. Lenoir Ryan against Lemoyne for D2. And then Salisbury takes on RIT. For D3.
And then Monday
on Westwood One Radio, 1 o'clock championship game. So it'll be a jam-packed weekend, but I'm excited. And to your point, Dan, I mean, just think about, like, I was reading the Baltimore Sun this morning, and it had the Maryland Terrapin football schedule for next season in the paper. And I think they've got a couple Friday night games, but I was like looking through and I'm like, wow, like, just think back to the football season. I can't remember how many games Maryland played, but how many were postponed or outright canceled. And then think about February and March for lacrosse, games that were postponed. You know, UMass, we talked about them. Their season was delayed by a month. But to be here, you know, to be here after a tremendous quarterfinal weekend into the championships, couldn't ask for anything more.
So the games will be at Rentschler Field, which is UConn's football stadium.
Right.
Sort of the regional stadium there. And that is in East Hartford. This is the first time that championships have been there. So that'll be a unique and new experience for fans. But do you have any idea of what the capacity is or that they're allowing to come? I think the stadium holds 40-some thousand, but I'm not sure, like, what they're going to allow, what the local rules are.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the first time since 2003 that the championships are not being held in an NFL venue. or an NFL stadium, correct?
That's correct.
You know, the rotation between M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore, the Link in Philadelphia, and Gillette in Foxborough. I think those have been the three that have rotated the championship. So this is the first time we're not going to be playing at an NFL venue in 18 years. I am not sure of the capacities. I'm not sure. I will say this. I know we're going to get into this a little bit later. Had Rutgers made it, man, bada boom, bada bing. You would have had a lot of Jersey presence, and they would have brought a ton of fans. They brought a ton of fans to Hofstra. As I'm watching that quarterfinal game, Carolina Rutgers, I equated it to the, I think it was 2014 when Albany played Notre Dame, and Notre Dame came back and won that game in overtime. And you just think about, like, I mean, nothing against Notre Dame, great team that year, but just the missed opportunity to have the Thompsons in championship weekend, like what that may have meant to the sport and to attendance and excitement and that kind of thing. So I'm kind of like pulling that forward and saying, wow, what if Rutgers could have gotten there, the proximity to Jersey and the first time and ever in the national semifinals, what they could have brought to the table. But again, Carolina, amazing team. They deserve to be in the national semifinals, and looking forward to watching them play on Saturday.
Yeah, certainly. Let's step back. That's a good segue to the week that was and the action that took place last Saturday and Sunday. We were treated to three outstanding games, but as you have done many times in the past, Dix, I would love to get your thoughts. We know who the winners are. We will talk about each of those teams and sort of how they got to championship weekend and how they'll match up, obviously, in their semifinal games. But let's talk about the four teams whose season ended in the quarterfinals. And we'll start with Rutgers then, since we've talked about them a little bit. What a great season for the Scarlet Knights, really a historic season, led by a group of older players, fifth year, sixth year, seventh year seniors in some cases, and a group that have left an indelible mark on the Rutgers lacrosse program.
Without question. And, you know, Rutgers is the team that I've gotten to know the program incredibly well over the last few years working for Big Ten Network. And they were always the ugly duckling, the team that was like right there to get into the NCAA tournament. And how many times were they the first out? So to see them get in this year, a well-deserved bid, and they throttle Lehigh in the first round. They took North Carolina all the way to the max. And we knew, people that are familiar with Rutgers knows that that team was capable of that, that that was a not only a quarterfinal quality team, but a potential championship weekend quality team. And they just fell a goal short in overtime. You mentioned it, you know, Sherlyn Beattie's Mullins, they've been there forever. To watch them have some success was really exciting. You throw in Connor Kirst, and he just made that attack so much more dangerous. You know, the middies, not deep, but talented, you know, freshman of the year in the Big Ten, Shane Knobloch. David Sprock is a terrific player. Ryan Gallagher has been there forever. But, you know, defensively, we saw a brand new unit, basically, other than Garrett Bullitt, Jared Jean Felix, and then Colin Kirst, the transfer from Lehigh. And then, you know, you got the short stick D middies, Tommy Coyne, a converted attackman, you know, Michael
Cinguetti.
I was like, forgot his name for a second. You know, players like that, Brennan Kamish, you know. So really, really happy for Rutgers that the national audience finally got to see them. You know, obviously they've been on national television with the Big Ten Network, but that could get regionalized. Mm-hmm. And I think the viewing during the regular season is oftentimes regionalized. People stick to their favorite teams and where they live and work and that kind of thing. But, you know, when you have the NCAA tournament, everyone's watching. And I was really happy for Brian Brecht and his Rutgers program to get a national audience and people saw what they were made of.
The other game on Saturday left a lot to be desired for fans. I had speculated that I thought Georgetown could win that game, and I was very wrong about that. James Riley, the fist-off guy, got hurt in the first quarter and it really changed the game. And Virginia just dominated them. But Georgetown had a great season for the Hoyer program, who again took a sort of another step forward under Kevin Warren. What are your thoughts on the Georgetown Hoyas?
Well, you weren't the only one that was thinking Georgetown was going to knock off Virginia. And, you know, we talked about this many times. I know we talked about it last week, that from round to round in the NCAA tournament, every week is new life. So you see Virginia coming out of that scrap with Bryant, and then Georgetown hammering Syracuse. And you're like, you know, Georgetown's the one trending to the moon. And Virginia just came out and laid the hammer on the Hoyas. There's no two ways about it. But and the folks at Inside, and the guys at Inside Lacrosse, who have done a nice job of picking games all year, I think if there's six of them, five out of the six picked Georgetown to win that game. So you weren't alone. Breakthrough season for Kevin Warren, his first ever NCAA tournament victory. And the Big East belongs to Georgetown right now. They've won the last three tournament championships. I know Denver is the program that gets the most publicity in that conference, but that is Georgetown's conference now. They are the team. And it'll be interesting moving forward how they're viewed, because I think the future is incredibly bright for Kevin Warren. You know, my son was recruited to Georgetown, and they were right there at the end. It was an incredibly hard decision for my son because of Kevin Warren, Mike Phipps, David Shriver, the facilities, the culture, the atmosphere. The kids are great. You know, they were great to us as a family, you know, as when Matt went on his visit. So that is a program I can't say enough good things about. Saturday was a terrible day for them in terms of lacrosse, in terms of lacrosse. But where that program has been, what Kevin Warren has been through, and then to where they are now, he's done an amazing job, an incredible job. And that is that program, that team will be not only NCAA tournament capable moving forward, but championship weekend capable. I think they're right there, and they'll take this experience and they'll get better from it.
Moving on to Sunday's games and where Matt Dixon will be going to play his college ball and spend his years. The Loyola Greyhounds lost a heartbreaker to the Duke Blue Devils in overtime on Sunday. And what a ride that program has had over the last several weeks. Just an incredible story. And they played that way. They played with an energy and an enthusiasm and a passion that was very admirable and well-deserving of a championship weekend appearance. The Loyola Greyhounds.
What a turnaround. 5-5. They lose to Navy after really, you know, dominating the midshipmen, you know, a couple weeks prior to that. And you're thinking, not only did they lose that game, but they lost two players in that game, Matt LeBlanc, a defender, and then Joey Kamish, an attackman. And you're thinking Loyola's, they're cooked, you know, put a fork on, they're done. And, you know, Charlie Toomey, Mark Van Arsdale, Matt Dwan, incredible men, you know, incredible men, but, you know, let alone coaches. And I think that they figured some things out. I think the players rallied together, and they played at an incredibly high level the last, 4 or 5 weeks of the season. They were unbelievable. And that just speaks to the prowess of that coaching staff and the determination and the moxie of the players, you know, to rally around one another and to, you know, to knock off Georgetown, who was riding high. And then you go to the Patriot League tournament and you're able to beat Navy, you know, get that taste out of your mouth. And then you knock off an Army team that had throttled them previous in the regular season. Then you have the end, what they thought was the end, you know, with the positive COVID test, only to get second life, you know, with an NCAA tournament bid and a clear away, one clear away. When they got that one goal lead, Longstick got it in the middle of the field. If they can just advance that ball up the field, get it behind the goal, we're talking about Loyola in the national semifinal. But credit Duke, you know, they fought, they got the ball back, they got the penalty on Cam Wires and converted. But Loyola was right there. And, you know, not to get too personal, but that culture and that program and how it's run, that's a big reason why my son chose to go there. And, you know, watching that game on Sunday and watching them throughout the season, you know, you're just so proud of those guys. And there's that, you know, there's that that affinity you have for him as a broadcaster and as the human element. But then when your kids go into that school and you see the effort those guys put in and, you know, everything that they stand for, you feel really good about it. So hats off to Duke, but Loyola took what was billed as the greatest show on earth in the preseason. They took him to the brink and could have won that game. How about Sam Schaefer too, the goaltender? I mean, that's a kid who lost his starting job, a couple weeks ago, and then gets back in and really, there were a lot of really great performances throughout the end of the regular season and then the postseason for Loyola, but none greater than Big Sam.
Another program that had certainly championship weekend aspirations and even perhaps championship aspirations was the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in 2021. Their season fell at home against the undefeated Terps on Sunday in another incredible lacrosse game to watch and enjoy.
Yeah, and beginning of the season, you knew the defense and the goaltending was going to be stout, but who was going to be scoring goals? And was it going to be a lot of 6-5, 7-6, 8-7? And it wasn't. I mean, that offense, you know, give a lot of credit to Kevin Corrigan and Chris Wojcik for the development and the maturation of that offense, in particular Kavanaugh. I mean, you know, the kid came from seemingly out of nowhere to be a Tuareton finalist. But it's not just him. You know, Jacobois, Dobson, and Will York fit in there. And, you know, the face-off guys, you know, who came over. And I mean, that's kind of a theme, and I don't want to be too negative about it. You know, free agency. I mean, Duke, 16 grad transfers or 16 grad students, you know, Notre Dame, I don't know the number there, but you know, a lot of hired guns, but yeah, you play with who you got. And, you know, I know we made a lot about Maryland getting hosed by the NCAA tournament committee. Notre Dame got hosed equally, quite frankly, other than the fact that they got to play the home game in the quarterfinal round, but there's no way that team was a number six seed. No way. And they shouldn't have had to play Maryland in the quarterfinal round. They really deserved better. But with that being said, fell behind early, fought back. So really a terrific season, you know, by the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. That quarterfinal game was appropriate for this coming Saturday, you know, if not Monday, those two heavyweights battling it out. But really what I'll remember most about this Notre Dame team is not the defense, which was great, which was terrific, but it will be the evolution of that offense. And I'm interested and I'm excited to see how it develops moving forward. They lose a lot of pieces off of this team. But you know, they are Notre Dame. And they've got an amazing track record. It's an incredible school. And I'm interested to see how, you know, this coaching staff, you know, Wellner and Wojcik, first year, really, in essence, you know, first full year, what they were able to do with Coach Corrigan, who's been there for decades, was really impressive.
Just a minute or so ago, did you hear a siren come by? I'm sitting in my office, and I saw, like, a paramedic truck. It made me think of safety first. I bring this up because May Madness is upon us, and the new Maverick EKG shoulder pads and chest protectors are in stock for all players everywhere. Get upgraded performance protection that meets the new NOXI safety standards. You can shop the whole line at lax.com/EKG. That's lax.com/EKG for the new Maverick EKG shoulder pads and chest protectors. All right, Dix, let's get to the meat and potatoes, the entree of this podcast.
Is it the entree or is it the appetizer? Because you got the championship. Can I make a confession? I think I may have said this before in years past. I get much more jacked up for Saturday than I do for Monday.
Oh, I completely agree.
Okay. Yeah, because Saturday is like hope's eternal. Everything's great.
Four fan bases together. Yeah, they're a championship weekend. Everyone thinks they have a chance to win. And it's a really great day. The worst part is, you know, like after the first game, people are trying to sell their Monday tickets. The one fan
yeah,
base,
yeah,
and it's just kind of sad. And then after the second game, and you're like, oh man, I came all the way up here. I was planning to be here till celebrating on Monday afternoon or evening, and then
a lot of hotel rooms open up.
What are we going to do now? Night. Where are we going now? Yeah, but let's get to the game. So what I'd like to do is go through each of the, as we look at the matchups, kind of break down each team and look at their resume and talk about their strengths and weaknesses. And we'll start with the first game. The number one seed, North Carolina Tar Heels, are playing the number four seed, Virginia Cavaliers. We had chalk, actually, the top four seeds all advancing to the semifinals. North Carolina, 13-2 on the season. Their two losses by a total of 3 goals. So they've had an outstanding season. They cruised past an overmatched Monmouth team, 16-4 in the first round. We talked about how they snuck by Rutgers 12-11 in overtime in the quarterfinals. When you think about this team, it starts with Tewart and finalist Chris Gray and the waves of middies, the dudes that we've said all season long, they've got dudes. But I got their defense has been underrated, I would say, but I'm not so sure that's true anymore. When you think of Will Bowen, their close defenseman, who's a first-team All-American, and then their the rest of their unit, Connor Marr and Matt Wright, for all ACC players. And Colin Krieg, freshman in the cage, has been just sensational. Can they be underrated at this point?
I don't think so. And this is a different Carolina team than their national championship team in 2016. Remember that? That group had to go on the road against Marquette in the first round, win in Milwaukee. And then, you know, their path to the championship was much more arduous than this go round. This is a legit national title. All four of these teams are legit national title contenders. But when you look at Carolina, you know, again, the two losses by 3 goals, the waves of athletes that they have, Tanner Cook banged up, played only EMO from what I saw on Saturday and got snuffed twice on the doorstep by Colin Kirst. What's his status for the game this weekend? Chris Gray, that play he made in overtime against Rutgers. And I know Brian Brecht has taken a lot of heat for not calling a timeout. I think he should have used a timeout. Been talking to a couple people, and they're like, well, they had Chris Gray called on defense, so let's try to play it out and exploit Chris Gray. Listen, this whole idea about super athletes and tremendous lacrosse players getting called on defense, like all of a sudden they're going to turn into a gimp, is preposterous. Call the timeout. Get your players on that you want. Run the play, right? I mean, even if – I don't know, man. Like, Chris Gray, to me, if he gets stuck on defense, I'm cool with that. You know, have him shut off if you think he's such a liability. But that kid, 3 assists on Saturday. Rutgers defense did a nice job neutralizing him, but he still impacted the game. Impacted the game to the point where you could argue that him and Justin Anderson won the game for North Carolina. You know, Anderson's another one. I know I've talked about him a lot through the years. He's just so impressive. You know, that hustle play that he made, you know, when Rutgers, you know, what was it, Kamish, that he hunted down and checked the ball out and got possession back and scores goals, etc. So, you know, again, Carolina, they're for real, man. And, you know, the two games against Virginia, they beat them 16-13. Then they lost 18-16. So this is the rubber match. This is it. Krieg will be huge. Faceoffs will be huge because we see what happens when LaSalle starts winning faceoffs. But we also saw what happens when Carolina can get mojo.
Yeah.
What was it? Tucci? Tucci came in and replaced Tyre and scored a big goal and then ran back to the faceoff dot. Or maybe it was the other way around. I can't remember. But this will be Carolina, this team is built for a championship. So we'll see if they can pull it through.
Their opponent will be the Cavaliers, as you mentioned. They have a win over North Carolina earlier in the season. Virginia is 12-4 on the season. All four losses were in ACC play. In fact, because they lost twice to Syracuse, Virginia came in last place in the ACC.
Yeah, 2-4, right?
Yeah, a testament to how strong that league was this year. They survived a scare against Bryan in the first round, and as we talked about, they pounded Georgetown in the quarterfinals. strengths of this team, you mentioned Petey LaSalle, and their top five or six guys on offense are as good as anybody has anywhere. But what are some of the weaknesses of this team?
I think the weaknesses of Virginia are sometimes they become one-dimensional on offense. The ball dies and certain guys sticks. So getting everyone involved, moving the ball, you know, Schellenberger is another next level talent. Matt Moore to me is a key in this game, really is. There are stretches where he disappears, which Docs Aiken will show up. But what their defense did last week, putting on their big boy pants and smacking Georgetown around, a team that physically is not a wallflower, you know, they're not wallflowers. I guess my question is, was that Virginia's best that we saw last weekend? Meaning, can they replicate or outdo that performance? You know, I think a lot of folks, with the way Georgetown destroyed Syracuse, everyone's thinking, oh my God, Georgetown's definitely going to beat Virginia. I think there's a lot of people saying, if Virginia plays like that, they're going to roll to another championship, because that's kind of what they did in 2019, especially in the national final against Yale, a physical team. They kind of got after them. My concern is, I don't know if they can replicate that. I don't know. I'm not sure. So, the strengths of this team, Alex Rode was the mop in 19, and he's played really well in the postseason. They are big and physical on defense. Petey LaSalle.
And this team has championship experience. A lot they of do. These players contributed on that 2019 national championship team. And they've been there. They know what it takes to win. And they're not going to be rattled at all.
And they also have different guys step up at different times. You know, it could be Connors. It could be Bertrand, it could be Laviano, you know, and their ride is still arguably the best in Division I men's lacrosse.
I think this game is going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a pretty high score.
Yeah, I agree. Are you predicting this week?
I think I'm going to. I wasn't sure, but I'm sitting here. I'm going to take the Tar Heels. I'm going to take the Tar Heels in this one.
Gotcha.
It'll be very close. I'm predicting like 16-15 or something. Really fun game for fans. All right, moving on to the second game. Number 3 seed in Maryland, 14-0 on the season, the champions of the Big Ten. We talked to John Tillman last week. They cruised through the Big Ten schedule, if you can say that. The only team that really played them tight was the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays in 3 matchups. They beat Vermont 17-11 in the first round. And obviously we talked about their game against Notre Dame, 14-13 overtime winners. You and I were talking during the game, and there was a point where they just weren't getting a lot of production out of Wisnowskis or Maltz. And then like that in the fourth quarter, both those guys scored a couple of goals, right?
Like, where's Wisnowskis? Where's Maltz? And it was like, Logan Wisnowskis with the beautiful shot. Daniel Maltz.
It'll be important. I think sometimes, you know, you can just, and I, you know, these guys played with him for so long, but you just have to stop and watch Jared Bernhardt sometimes. Just things that kid does. It's just, they're just, I almost can't blame their players for standing around watching it, but they're going to have to be involved. Their whole team is going to have to be involved this week. Obviously the strengths of the team are their attack unit. Think their defense is outstanding, and they can win faceoffs too, but they're going to have they lost 20 out of 30 against Notre Dame.
Right.
And I think they're going to be challenged. Their faceoff unit will be challenged again this week against Jake Naso and Duke. What's your thoughts on the Terps' strengths and weaknesses as they look towards this Blue Devils matchup?
You know, I don't know why it didn't come to me earlier, but like watching the game this past weekend and watching Bernhardt move, especially against a defense like Notre Dame and a defenseman like Jack Keelty. Like if you think about superheroes, he's like the Silver Surfer. Remember the Silver Surfer? Like how he's got that board and like how quick he can cut and how fast and, you know, and you know, he's tall and lean. And that's Jared Bernhardt, you know, so fun to watch. Interesting note, Jared's not doing any media this week. Really hasn't done any media all year. We were lucky enough to get him twice in the Big Ten tournament, And, you know, it's not him being a diva. That's just his personality. He's not comfortable doing media and he's just focused on winning a championship. So here you have the best player in the country who is shy. And we've seen that come across on the field sometimes where he's been, you know, he's deferred to his teammates in the past. And I don't think we're seeing that deferential personality so much, you know, in 2021. He did, you know, there was a little bit of a law after he had, what, 4 goals in the first half, and then he scored 1 second half goal, which was EMO. But I think Notre Dame made some adjustments on the defensive end. And when they did, Wisnowskis was able to get free. You know, DeMeo scores the game winner. Maltz steps up. You know, you got to worry about Fairman. So strengths of this team, they play man-to-man offense. You know, they're in your face constantly. They're constantly putting pressure on defenses. I agree. Face-offs can be shaky with Maryland, but this is a team that won a national championship in 17 with their third guy on the depth chart. So they're not afraid to make changes. Defensively, they got 2 number ones, Makar and Grill. And how about the job Grill did on Kavanaugh last week? I've been meaning to look up the final line on Kavanaugh, but, you know, Grill basically erased him in that game. McNaney hasn't been great in the postseason. I thought he played well in the second half against Notre Dame, but he's been a little shaky, but he's still undefeated. Logan McNaney is still undefeated as a Maryland Terrapin. He's never lost a game. So this team is built to win a championship. We'll see if they can pull it through this weekend.
A team that was built for a championship is their opponent. The 2-seeded Duke Blue Devils, they're 14-2. They lost 2 close games to Notre Dame and North Carolina on the season. In the offseason, they added 4 key players amongst others. They added 2 grad transfers and Michael Sowers and Adler in the goal, and brought in 2 stud freshmen who are starting for them, and Brennan O'Neill at attack and Jake Naso at faceoffs. They were described as a super team by many in the preseason, and they have lived up to expectations somewhat, but they've shown some weaknesses here and there. In the first round, they beat High Point 16-10, and they snuck by Loyola 10-9 in overtime in the quarters. Strengths and weaknesses of the Duke Blue Devils, Dix.
I think the expectations maybe were a little bit unfair in the beginning of the season. On paper is one thing, but in reality is another. This is still a really, really good lacrosse team, very dangerous lacrosse team. Quick look back. In addition to Duke, so Duke was number one in some people's eyes, but who was the other preseason number one?
Syracuse
was. So credit Duke for making it to championship weekend, whereas a lot of people would say Syracuse, who was bounced in the first round in an ugly fashion, shouldn't even have been in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. So, you know, Duke has done John Donowski's done a pretty good job of managing this team, but at times they look like an all-star team. You know, what is the offense? What is the identity on the offense? What is the purpose of the offense? And a lot of times, you know, when you're watching all-star games, you don't ask those questions because there really isn't. You know, there's guys just going to the goal. Look, you know, one player that really has stood out to me, especially in the last month, is Brennan O'Neill. Like, his ability to make plays. It's going to be funny because he had 4 goals on Sunday. I just feel like he needs to be more involved in the offense, quite honestly.
I love when you see stats like his or Bernhardt's where he's 5 of 7, you know, shooting. Yeah. You're like, Jared, you got to get more shots.
Right.
Brennan O'Neill, you need to take more shots.
Right.
You need to take more chances because you're scoring on a high percentage.
Yeah. Nekhai Montgomery was held pointless on Sunday, and I thought he made some bad decisions with the ball. He's going to have to be smarter, which he normally is. Yeah, you know, that's why he's such season. That's why he's such a good passing midfielder, but I thought he was holding the ball a little too long. So maybe he's putting some more pressure on himself to make plays, you know, as an older player, as a veteran player who's been there before. But you know, the strengths of Duke is they have different guys who can step up, and God forbid this game go to overtime and Joe Robertson gets the ball on his stick, because three
game winners.
Yeah. And they've got, and Duke has 4 OT wins on the season.
Yeah. So 4-0 in overtime on the season.
Another strength of Maryland are their shorties, you know, Puglisi and Smith and Kaufman. you know, the loss to Higgins, or the loss of Higgins, is big, but I think those three have done a really nice job. I think Duke shorties can be attacked and are good, but I don't find that to be a strength of their team. Their defense has gotten better throughout the year. Will JT Giles-Harris guard Bernhardt? You know, JT Giles-Harris sometimes in the season has taken the off-ball guy, i.e. Owen Hiltz from Syracuse. Will he be assigned to Bernhardt? I think he will.
You got to put your fastest defender on Bernhardt.
Sure.
Quickest guy.
No doubt. No doubt.
And I don't know if that's JT Giles-Harris, but I think it is.
Well, he's their number one. And, you know, number one versus number one. But, you know, it would be interesting to see if maybe he gets Wisnowskis and, you know, somebody else gets.
So he can slide and help.
Maybe. Yeah. Potentially. Grill on Sowers. Is it Grill on Sowers or is it Makar on Sowers?
I might put Grill on Sowers and Makar on O'Neal because he's a little bit bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting matchups all over the field. This will be a terrific game.
Yeah. It's a toss up to me. I think I'm going to go with the Terps, though.
Have a Maryland Carolina final.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with the Terps, keep rolling. And okay. They get to championship Monday, but sneaking by Duke. Dix, tell me where I can hear you calling these games on Westwood One. That's a national radio.
It is. So it's national radio. I'm not sure.
Because I'm going to be in the car, I think, on Saturday, probably for the first game. We're going somewhere, and I feel like I'm going to be stuck in the car, and I'm going to be looking for this on. I'm going to be in Pennsylvania, so that should be able to pick up Westwood One, like between.
Yeah,
a Philly type of station or a New York station should be able to have Westwood One. Or do I have to go internet radio? Do I have to go internet radio?
You might. I should have come better prepared for local affiliates, but I don't know. That list hasn't been shared with me. With Maryland in it, I have to assume that it'll be available in the Maryland DC area. Okay. A lot of Terp fans down here. I'll get that information. Like, I'll tweet that out, like where to find it.
Oh, that'd be great. I'm sincere. I need that information because I will be in my car driving.
Oh, sure.
At least during the first game.
And I'm sure there's an app, you know, you can listen through the app or, you know, I'm sure it'll definitely be on Sirius XM.
Okay.
Definitely on satellite radio for sure. Again, I just have to find out the particulars.
It's time for the give and go. We recorded this early this morning, 8 a.m. record time for us. And I was coming into the office and I was hungry. So I wanted to stop and pick something up, and it gave me a good idea for something I don't think we've ever talked about. But when the Dixon family is heading to that lacrosse tournament, you know, and you're leaving out in the morning, where do you stop for your breakfast? Who has the best fast food breakfast that the Dixon families, the boys, are going to pick up something for the road trip?
Good question. Good question.
I'll start. I'm a McDonald's. Like, I don't think you can beat the McDonald's breakfast for a car ride. The Egg McMuffin, literally top notch. I have always referred to it as the official breakfast sandwich of NATO. American cheese, Canadian bacon, English muffin, and a poached egg. That's like for French, right?
Yeah.
It's like the NATO breakfast sandwich, and it's delicious. And the hash browns at McDonald's. Come on. My daughter, that's all she wants for breakfast is McDonald's hash browns. So you like three or four of them.
Okay.
After that, I do like Dunkin' Donuts. I'm not a big fan of, like, I don't mind Dunkin' Donuts coffee. I know some people swear by it. It's good, but I don't think it's like the greatest thing in the world. They're little hash brownie things. Again, my kids love them. Those little round kind of things. They remind me of the Bojangles, the Bo Rounds. If you've ever been like a chicken biscuit sandwich from Bojangles, that's probably like my third choice if you can find one. But then, you know, you can't beat the donuts and the munchkins from Dunkin' Donuts. Their sandwiches leave a lot to be desired. They never toast the muffins enough, like the English muffin. It's always like soggy. It's like raw. They're just not good. So I always have to have them double toast if I'm getting like a breakfast sandwich or something. The croissant sandwich at Dunkin' Donuts is pretty good. You just have to be specific. It's exactly what you want when you go there. So I put those in my top three. I don't really like Burger King. Like, I don't really even know what they have there. Chick-fil-A too. The little biscuity, chickeny biscuity things from the biscuits from Chick-fil-A are so good. So if you get like a breakfast sandwich from Chick-fil-A, top notch. I turn this over to you. A true give and go.
Thank you. Thank you. Like the mayo from Wisnowskis. Okay. McDonald's, can't argue with you there. Love the Egg McMuffin. Had one a couple weeks ago when I was up at Penn State, actually. Was running late and needed to grab something fast. I tell you, though, the best breakfast sandwich at McDonald's, bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. Yeah, bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit is legit. And the fact that they do breakfast all day is cool.
Revolutionary.
Because actually, you know what? That was my dinner one night. It was my dinner. It was breakfast. I feel like getting, you know, I don't eat McDonald's, you know, although, you know, like the double cheeseburgers, legit quarter pounder with cheese, Big Mac every now, you know, but like, I don't eat, but I will get breakfast from McDonald's every now and again. So I'm with you on McDonald's. Dunkin' Donuts to me is trash. I am not a coffee drinker.
You better be careful. You're going to heading up to New England this weekend.
I know. And a couple of years ago at Patriot Place, you know, there must have been like five Dunkins in Patriot Place.
We used to count the Dunkin' Donuts driving from, we would stay in downtown Boston and drive out to Foxborough. That was a game we'd play in the car, is count the Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah. To me, Dunkin' is trash. The breakfast sandwiches are terrible. I'm not a coffee drinker, so I can't speak to their coffee. I have several friends who swear by Dunkin' coffee.
Yeah,
the donuts. The Munchkins are good. I like the Munchkins. I do like the Munchkins. Their donuts, oh, they suck.
Oh,
they suck. I mean, but this is, I love donuts. I mean, just look at me. You can tell I love donuts. So like when I drive up to Penn State, if I'm so inclined, I'll pull off and go to Maple Donuts up there. Those are real donuts. Grew up on the Catonsville Bakery down on Emerson Avenue.
You ever had a duck donut?
Yes, I don't like duck. I'm not a duck fan, and I'm not a what's the one down Ocean City?
I like the duck donut. I don't like the ordering of the duck donuts. There's like too much pressure. Like, how do I want these? But there's something about them. It's like soft on the inside, but there's like a crispiness to each donut. They're just
fractured.
Fantastic.
Fractured prune.
Yeah,
I don't like fractured prune. Okay. Fractured prune and duck are the same, in that they're
the same donut. They're just decorated.
They're cake donut, and you choose your own toppings,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, like I still think they're good.
Okay. I love my favorite, other than the Catonsville Bakery, from when I'm growing, you know, they bake the stuff from scratch. I love when I go to Chicago, I go to Stan's Donuts. They have.
I thought you were going to say when you go to the Giant, you just go to the bakery and take those.
I don't mind Giant.
Sloppy donuts.
Well, you know what? You know what the greatest donuts were. And I don't think I don't even know if they make them anymore, but like the powdered sugar donuts, the Giant brand powdered sugar donuts, they're awesome, man. Dude, I used to. No. The Giant brand. And they, sometimes they sell them. I used to get just the powdered sugar, like straight up. And like I'd have a bowl of cereal and like put the donut in the cereal, you know, and like dunk it down and eat it. But they'll do a whole thing of like cinnamon donuts, a whole thing of powdered sugar, and a whole thing of cake. But then you can find the mixture of them, of like cinnamon, powdered sugar, cake, and Giant. Like maybe our listeners around the country might not like Giant is a food store.
Yeah,
you know, much like a Food Lion or Kroger's, or you know, you could go to different sections. Sections of the country.
Pathmark.
Yeah, but Giant, like I go to Giant. You know, there's a Giant right up the street from my house. Whenever I need anything, I go to Giant, you know. But my favorite breakfast, hands down, bar none, Chick-fil-A, chicken, egg, and cheese biscuit. Chicken, egg, and cheese biscuit. Heart attack central. Artery clogging central. But every now and again, if you're in the mood for breakfast. And you know what? I always have the biggest hankering for a chicken, egg, and cheese biscuit
on Sunday morning.
It's on Sunday
morning.
It's on Sunday, yeah. When they're not open.
Yeah.
So if, I tell you what, man, game changer. I mean, Chick-fil-A already is a, you know, just prints money, but if they made breakfast available all day.
Oh yeah.
Forget about
it. So my dentist is over in Maple Lawn, and you know where I live. So it's on my way home. And so I'll go in the morning And I hate going to the dentist. So it's like, I'll treat myself and I drive by the Chick-fil-A that's there, Johns Hopkins Road in 29. And a couple of times I'd missed, they're like, I'm sorry, sir. It's 10:02. We're not serving breakfast anymore. You're like, you mean to tell me? I go, I can see you have a couple sandwiches, like stuff. They're like, I'm sorry, quality standards. We can't sell that to you. And I'm like, can you give it to me? Like I'll buy something else. And then you just put that in the bag because I want a breakfast sandwich right now. So yes, I'm all about the all day breakfast for places that do.
So wait a minute. Really did you ultimately get, because I
can't, no, I didn't. See
Chick-fil-A they, people giving it to you. Like they refused. So, the customer service is so great.
They refused.
Oh, wow.
They're like, no, we can't do that to you right now, sir. So I just try to hustle out. I go to like 9 o'clock appointment and try to hustle out of there. Get to
speed Chick-fil-A. This up there, Dr. Watley.
You're an anti Chick-fil-A person, aren't you, Wally?
Yeah, right.
He's got a picture of the cows in his office.
I'm going to hold you so you can't get your Chick-fil-A. And just give you a speckle of fluoride.
All right. I think that's a good place to end it. All right. Thank you for listening to us. And if you like what you heard, please like us. Please love us on your favorite podcast app. Leave a review. Make it a 5-star review. Tell a friend. Share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm at simply at D_FLY. At D_FLY. Dix, I think we have one more show in us.
I was going to say, stick around next week. We will do a wrap-up show.
Yeah, we're going to do like a season.
If not more, I mean, you know, maybe if the mood strikes us.
Yeah, if we're so inclined, I might even try to pull some clips. We might do like a, what did you call it? The Dixie Flies or something? awards?
The Dixie Flies. Yeah. Why not?
And you're going to get gift certificates to Chick-fil-A for breakfast. All the winners. We'll send our favorite coach interviews. But yeah, remember, we're there, folks. We've made it through the season. Let's enjoy championship weekend. Continue to stay positive. Continue to test negative. And as always, enjoy the games.